Are you not entertained?
Welcome to History and Technicolor, everybody. It is me, and it is...
me, Wolf O'Neill.
Excellent. So, we are here to discuss a new movie. But before we do, Wolf, can I ask you, obviously, since we recorded the last episode, we've been away together on famine.
Woo!
Yeah! Can I ask you if you've recovered from your experience with the Italian toll booths?
No, I haven't. I saw a toll booth in a movie a few weeks ago, and I found it quite stressful.
I have to say, we haven't stopped laughing yet.
Also, I was talking again about how Bologna is cursed, because in the context, I accidentally drove almost 2 hours the wrong way north to Bologna when I was meant to be going south from Florence. But the context for why it's cursed is Iron Maiden's concert in Bologna got cancelled due to lightning strikes.
No.
The other night.
That is spooky. Yeah. I must admit, I'm so impressed with the fact that you drove 2 hours in the wrong direction, 180 degrees in the wrong direction, you know.
And the whole time I kept going, I don't recognise anything.
Anyway, so obviously very traumatic. So today we are gathered together to talk about a film called Lagan. And I am going to tell you why we are selecting said film. And they are dirty, grotty reasons in the main, except for one. Okay? So, the reason is that the most popular movie by far, which I think we may have mentioned before, in history and Technicolor, is Badjiri Mastani. Okay? So, in a cynical attempt to win listenership, we have decided to go for another Bollywood movie, Lagan. Okay? That is the dirty reason. The other issue about Lagan, apart from the fact that it's a dirty reason, a cynical, market-grabbing reason, is that it is an actually a historical movie, turns out. Now, to be fair to me, I thought it was, you know, because it was on a list of historical movies. And, you know, I always believe what I read on the interweb.
Yep.
But it's not really. I mean, it's kind of set in a historical context, I suppose, in the Raj. But anyway, so those are the apologies over. The good reason is that when we went to Italy together on Famille, we said, we happened to say, oh, we were thinking of doing Lagan. And Craig said, oh, how many times have I watched Lagan? It's a great movie. So, you know, cool. Good reason for doing it.
Yep. And based on Craig's recommendation, we have we've chosen to do it.
So if you're listening, Craig, it's all your fault. Okay. I'm going to start off with a question for you, Wolf. Generally speaking, what do you think of the Bollywood format?
I don't know a lot. I have only seen a handful of movies, and that's being generous. I was going to recommend, and technically, this is the movie I'm about to recommend. It's a Tollywood movie, which I've only just learned about, which is from another segment of India.
Tollywood?
Yeah, it's from Telugu cinema. So it's Tollywood.
Telugu cinema,
it's like you get Nollywood, which is in Nigeria.
Okay.
And they're just different film industries. But this Tollywood movie is called RRR, and it's on Netflix, at least in the UK, and I think in America. And it's one of the smash hits of the year. It's incredible. I would highly recommend it. I think everyone would enjoy it.
What's it called again?
It's called RRR. Just the letter three times.
Well, I have an idea. Why don't we start a Loughwood industry? You know, where you could have Loughborough singing, dancing routines.
Would it be called
that sort of thing? Because, you know, they sing and dance in Loughborough.
Would it be called Lollywood?
Well, Lollywood. Excellent. Lollywood it is. That'd be great. Okay, but yes, generally, what do you think? Do you like it, or are you just doing it for duty's sake?
No, I honestly, the few films I watched, I have loved. I just think the experience is so enjoyable. There's a level of excitement and passion and just fun that I feel is kind of unrivaled. And
yeah,
the movies are generally long, but I don't notice it. They've just got so much packed in, and they're just having such a fun time, and it's so different from a lot of what we're watching every week, or, you know, just whatever's coming out of the cinema. And it's just, I don't know, I'm beaming from ear to ear every time I watch one.
Well, I am entirely of your mind. I think they're great fun. There's enormous energy in there. It's absolutely incredible. I just love the music, singing and dancing is great.
Yeah.
So not sure I could watch it all the time, but I don't actually want to. Anyway, so we're both fans of Lollywood. Well, I'm not sure Loughborough would do the singing and dance quite so well, actually. So shall I tell you about the film that we're going to listen to talk about today?
Please do.
It is called Lagan. Lagan is actually the name of a tax, which is a traditional tax in India, which was also then bossed by the British Raj. Mm-hmm. It is set in the historic town of Champaner in Gujarat, Western India. Again, at the time of the British Raj, I think 1893 is the date.
Yep.
That, Wolf, is as far as its historical chops go.
Yep.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
We've done the history now. Okay, so it is a film that combines a number of different elements. You might want to add to this list if you think I've missed any. Mm-hmm. There is David against Goliath. Mm-hmm. I'm going to let you guess who the David is and who the Goliath is. It's feel good. It's music and dancing and laughter, just like, you know, the Copacabana. There's a bit of love interest in there. Tiresome. Sport. The sport, Wolf. This is a sports movie. And there is unity against the Imperial Invader. It is, in summary, a hoot.
Yeah.
Getting hold of it, by the way, was a bit of a challenge, was it not? So I think you needed to buy the DVD.
Okay, but
although I think it's on Amazon in the US.
I think it's on Netflix in America. I had to buy the DVD twice because the first time I bought it secondhand, it was split onto two discs and they only sent the second disc.
Now, that's
so then I had to get rid of that, get a refund, order it again.
Let's not make problems for the audience, Wolf. It was easy to get hold of, wasn't it?
Easy peasy. Easy peasy.
Squeeze the lemon. So, okay, it was made in 2001 in the Hindi language, so it's subtitled, was written and directed by Ashutosh Goenka. It stars Aamir Khan as the hero Bhavan, who actually rejected doing the film three times. Not quite sure why. I thought it was silly. Then he read the script and thought it was great. And it stars Gracie Singh as Gowri. Okay, it was a great success. It was the third highest grossing film, Indian film in 2001. It was nominated for an Oscar, Best Foreign Language Movie. Here is the plot. Basically, the evil British Captain Russell, who is a typical evil British Russell in all the idioms, tried to force the poor downtrodden Raja of Camp Champaner, well, the extremely rich, poor, downtrodden Raja of Champaner, it must be said, to eat meat, and gets into an evil argument with his evil moustache twitching and forces him to charge Lagan, the traditional tax, despite the fact that it has not rained and the villagers cannot pay. First question for you then, Wolf, or second question. On a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being a lot, how close is Captain Russell to the traditional English public school imperialist bounder, cad, and general bad egg? And what are the recognisable features of this type?
He's incredibly arrogant. Incredibly arrogant. To answer the first question, let's say a 10.
A 10, yes. I think that's fair. In fact, I think you may be undermarking it.
He's snooty.
Snooty is a thing.
He has this really annoying smile when things are going his way, which is that shit-eating grin. He's got it.
Are we now going to have to mark this episode explicit?
Let's say no.
It'll be a no then. Okay, I absolutely agree with you. So the evil Captain Russell gets into a barney with a Bolshi villager and threatens to triple the Lagan, or he's going to cancel it completely for 3 years.
And for the entire region?
For the entire region, if the villagers play a weird English game called cricket and win against the Imperial British Invader. That is the setup.
One little note. Okay? This all happens because Bhavan calls the game silly, and the English take a particular...
does he? I miss that little nuance.
I think it's because he refers to the game as silly, and then they're like, right, that is just... That's simply not cricket. And...
Yes, that expression does get used. Actually, doesn't he say it's just a game, the Gilly Dandy, a children's game in India?
Yeah.
So, yes, quite right too, and nobody insults cricket and gets away with it in England. This is before the time when Ashish Nandi declared in the Tao of Cricket that, and I quote, cricket is an Indian game accidentally discovered by the British, which is one of my favourite quotes of life, actually. So the scene is set then between the humble, honest, brave villagers fighting for freedom against the hated Ferengis. Did you note the use of the word Ferengis?
Yes, but I'm going to say I don't know what it means.
Okay. It is apparently rather interesting, actually, as a word. So it means foreigner. Basically, it's an ordinary Indian term for the European. In the 19th century, it was applied especially to the Indian-born Portuguese. So it's a sort of contemptuous word for foreigner. But interestingly enough, the bit that I found very interesting is it's a derivative of the word Farangi, which is an Eastern word you see in Byzantium a lot, of the word for Frank. So it's a wonderful little tradition of the word Frank being used for Western Europeans in the form Ferengi. Anyway, and it obviously made its way over to India. Anyway, I warble. Anyway, one thing leads to another, as you can imagine. The villagers have to learn this weird game. And then, enter Elizabeth, the beautiful English Rose, who thinks her brother, the evil Captain Russell, is a bounder and a cad, and teaches them the rules of the game, including the leg-before-wicket rule, and incidentally, falls in love, though not with the leg-before-wicket rule. So, Wolf, who did you want to win the game, as if I need to ask?
The villagers.
The villagers. And I had a problem here. Mm-hmm. Wolf. Oh, by the way, I forgot to mention that there is a big reveal coming at some point during this episode, which I will announce. Okay. I have to say, before I listened to this movie, I struggled with the concept of watching it because in my world, as a deeply patriotic Englishman, the English always have to win. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's not acceptable in any circumstance for the English to lose. I just want to make that clear.
Okay? Is there one exception?
And therefore I object. There's no objections, not even in this film movie. It's an outrage. Oh, well, plot spoiler. But, I mean, you know. So I was worried about my personal reaction, but I seem to have managed to survive and still enjoyed the movie. So, happy days. And actually, I watched another movie set in Bechuanistan. It was about the King of Bechuanistan, and it was all about, you know, the injustice of the British Raj and he married an English woman and all the rest of it. And actually, I watched that and I was totally on their side. So maybe I'm growing up. Maybe I'm acquiring some maturity. What do you think, Wolf? I'm 58, after all. It's about time puberty hit me.
In this movie, it's designed in a way that there's only one side that you can ever root for.
Well, it is true, yes. It's not subtle, is it?
No.
Subtlety is not its middle name.
Yeah, I couldn't picture it being done any other way. Just nicely kind of caricatured and enjoyable.
True, which moves us on to the film as a film, Wolf.
Mm-hmm.
So the first point is that there is plenty of cricket in this game. Shall I do the big reveal now? Lagan is 3 hours, 50 minutes long. It was actually originally released at how many hours? Did you read that?
No, I don't know. Five and a half?
Seven.
Oof.
Seven.
I wonder how many hours of cricket that was. Like how long the final game went on for.
Given the final game went on for an hour and a half, I think they probably concentrated quite a lot about the ball landing outside of the line of the wicket and whether that would constitute an LBW decision. You know, I should think that took up a couple of hours. And then maybe you'd go, since in the film you go through all the various forms of discovery of the various bowling, you know, you get a googly and a Chinaman and whatever. Probably you'd go through all the various kinds of bounces, the leg side approach of body line and that sort of thing. You need to go through them all. Anyway, so I want to see the 7 hour version because that sounds fun.
Yeah.
History of cricket. So there is plenty of cricket in this game. Are you a fan of cricket, Wolf?
I don't watch it, but I used to play it a little bit as a child.
Right.
I wouldn't say I'm a fan. But I'm not opposed to it, and I enjoyed watching it a lot in this film. Really enjoyed the cricket match at the end.
Cricket match was fun, wasn't it? And quite tense, anyway. Even though, you know, we always knew the answer. So you get the various tropes in the cricket match, actually. So you get the vicious fast bowler. You get evil tricks like running out small boys at the bowler's end. You get the bouncer. There is sledging in the Australian style of cricket. We discover the googly and the Indian spinner. And of course, the Indian spinner is an iconic figure in world cricket because the English just can't cope with spinners. So we discover that. So there's loads of tropes that come up, which as a cricket fan, I loved. The natives learn the complexity of the game pretty well because they know nothing at the beginning because they say, you know, they just think it's a silly game. And it's got to be said, actually, I was quite surprised that no one seems particularly fussed like arcane rules, like, I don't know, the application of the no ball at various critical points in the game. There's no questioning of whether the ball pitches outside leg or any of that kind of stuff. So anyway, it's great. It is not a film of surprises, Wolf, I think you'd agree. Did anything surprise you?
It surprised
in the movie?
Me once.
Did it?
Right at the very, very end of the game.
Ah, yes.
It did surprise me once with that red herring of like kind of what was going to happen.
Right.
Remember when they come up to the, it's the very last bat. Oh, is it Kashra? It has to bat the very last time.
Yes.
And there's five, what do they say? There's five to go. Anyway, it was.
Yes.
At that point, I was like, oh, okay, this is the... Then it all been like, this is the final, final bat of the game. And then, of course, there's one more that comes afterwards.
Yes, okay.
And so that was when it got
yes.
me.
So actually, that sold me a bit of a dummy as well, but I just let it wash over me. Okay, so you know exactly what you're going to get in this film, everybody. It is Ron Seal, not Forrest Gump. But here's what I loved about the movie. The feel-good is all over the place. It is dripping in feel-good. It's a story of a village and a group of people putting together, sinking their differences, coming round to the idea of a really challenging situation. It's about class, colour, creed all coming together in the face of a common enemy and in the face of adversity. You know, they don't always sugarcoat that. You know, there is some tension and some conflict and some anger in the movie, but it all gets delightfully resolved. The colours are fantastic. The scenery all feels thoroughly authentic. They chose the village carefully, apparently. The costumes were created by Banu Athaya, who worked on Gandhi, apparently. The soundtrack and dancing are absolutely superb. We've already enthused about that. Everything that you'd expect from Bollywood, or indeed Lollywood. Great tunes, upbeat, just a joy. Really loved it. The acting is sort of fine. I mean, you know, we're not talking method, darling, or high art. We're not talking Dear Dear Dickie. And it's a bit hammy in places, but it never gets in the way. It's all... You know, it's all absolutely fine. There is a lovely contrast between the stuffy, formal, buttoned-up English in their military uniform and top hats and frock coats, that sort of thing. So you've got on one side, you've got this relaxed, straightforward villagers, which works really well. On the other side, you've got this stuffy, you know, English Raj stuff. Which leads me on to a couple of questions. First of all, how does that, you know, is that what you like? What else did you like?
I loved every single thing about it.
Then reasonably unequivocal then.
It should be clear that there are flaws in the movie. It is not a complex movie. Everything kind of works out nicely and gets tied with a bow. I mean, obviously there's no historical truth to it, but also it's completely unbelievable that the British would ever just be like, oh, okay, yeah, your tax is taken away for 3 years because you won this cricket game. I just no one would allow the game to go ahead. Like, none of this would happen. But I don't care because it's so exciting and it's so fun. I wouldn't say that I'm a huge sports movie fan, but it kind of does everything that a good sports movie should. You've got all the montages of everyone learning how to play the game. It's fun to see everyone slowly... So in the movie, nobody wants to join in with Bhavan and help play this game, and he's on his own. But then he has to, over the course of like an hour or so, he has to slowly turn all of his like friends and neighbors around and get them to join the team. And that's fun. It's getting the band back together, building a gang ready for a heist. You're kind of having to find everyone with their unique skills in all these different scenarios and then put them into the game.
Yes, actually, that's true. That's another element, actually, isn't it? The coming together of the team sort of thing. You know, the storming, norming, forming bit of the, whatever the bullshit bingo is. You know, the business expression. Yes, there's a lot of that, isn't it? Which is great.
Yeah, and they're all so different, and every single one of them has like has a profession. So there's like the drummer, the like a potter. There's the poultry farmer, and they have all their different. There's a carpenter, I guess. They have all these kind of different professions, and then they work out how each of those jobs suits you to a different position within the team, and then they start crafting this team of 11. It's just really fun. The musical numbers are excellent. That first rain dance, like, I'm completely swept up. And when the clouds turn away, it got me. I didn't expect that was going to happen. I don't. It seems silly.
Devastated. Yeah. No.
Yeah. It just.
And then it rains at the end, which is, you know, kind of like the perfect culmination of the whole thing, isn't it?
The movie gives you everything, like all those kind of those peaks and those troughs. You're with all the characters the whole way through. Throughout the game, I'm on the edge of my seat. You just want to jump up and cheer at the end. Like, it does feel like you've watched a really good live sporting event that you've been a part of, and you've been cheering for the underdog. The underdog element to it is obviously aids the story immensely, because there's no question about whose side you're on ever. And then when you can see when things are turning, that the tide is turning, and I just loved it in a way that I really didn't think that I would.
Yeah, very good. It's great. I mean, there's another trope actually in that as well, which is the enthusiastic Indian cricket crowd, isn't it? It's very interesting. Well, it's a lot of fun how on one side of the pitch you've got all these, you know, these Indian, enthusiastic Indian supporters whooping and cheering and all the rest of it, as Indian cricket crowds do. And the other side, you've got all the guys in the pavilion, you know, the English people sitting with sipping their cups of tea, and the women all buttoned up, you know, making, oh, I say, it's really good shot, you know, and that sort of thing.
I did.
It's a real, they really play that trope for all it's worth.
Did you believe that the, like, British High Command would appreciate the game of cricket so much that even when they're going to lose their bet and the whole region's going to stop being taxed, that they would continue to politely commend the opposing team for how well they've played cricket?
Of course.
Okay.
So this was obviously, clearly this was a major concern. And I, you know, I have a question around this about how the British came out of the movie. But from my point of view, you know, I was delighted that, you know, that I don't think they come out of it that badly. I mean, obviously, Captain Russell is the evil villain of Doom, and it is, as a film, it's satisfyingly anti-imperialist, but in a way that is relatively gentle. You know, this is not an angry film. It clearly makes the point that they don't want the Brits there, and they don't like them. They want to get rid of them. They see them as parasites. So, you know, there's no oh, this is great for India thing. But on the other hand, you know, it's not in your face in a terrible way.
Yeah, it does pull its punches, like me was,
yeah, I was perfectly able to enjoy it. And it includes some sort of love across the barricades thing. And, of course, as a historical record, there is the way the English are treated. So I'll leave that, you know, when we talk about history. Okay, and I'll come back to it. How did you think the British came out of the movie?
Well, first of all, I wasn't too critical because the movie is, it's clearly meant to be so entertaining, and that's its primary goal, that even though it has this kind of political context, and it clearly has one view, which is, you know, as you said, they shouldn't be there, it's not a political movie. And as such, it kind of wants to have fun, and that's why you get all those scenes later. Like, do I believe that there's just this one bad character, this like one bad egg, and that everyone else is kind of a little bit more reasonable, and that maybe there are some things that are like working at you, and that they'll just like get rid of this one problem and they'll support the villagers and cheer them on when they win? No, I don't believe any of that would happen. The one bad egg probably isn't going to be that extreme, and then everyone's going to be kind of, in control. Anyway, it adds to the enjoyment of the film. I thought it was very comedic, and I laughed a lot every time. They'd all be like, oh, good show. Oh, absolutely incredible batting. Huh. Yes. And I just think that it's the tone of the movie. It's that, like, family movie.
Hmm.
And I can picture the absolutely packed cinemas across the country. Everyone there to have this great time. And it's not going to be the kind of... it would be a totally different film if it wanted to deal with a lot of these issues. So I'm not going to judge it for that. So I said the British kind of come off, like, okay.
And then another supplementary question raised by a previous comment you just made. What is... So you're not that keen on a sports movie. What is the greatest sports movie ever made?
The greatest sports movie ever made.
So the alarm went off because I asked you a question I hadn't asked before.
That was the time running out. Had to make a decision.
Yeah, it's too late.
My mind is blank. The only two sports movies I could think of... Well, you'll probably say Chariots of Fire... But
I don't hate Chariots of Fire. I mean, yeah, it's a good movie. I like Chariots of Fire, but it's not my favorite.
Okay, the only one I could think of was the British remake of The Longest Yard, which was Mean Machine.
Oh yeah, the Mean Machine with Burt Reynolds.
Playing football in
was
the
that
prison.
Burt Reynolds?
Oh no, wait. Okay, there's the Burt Reynolds Mean Machine, and then there's early 2000s one where Jason Statham is the goalie. And and Vinnie Jones is the lead.
Ah, excellent. Well, any film with Vinnie Jones in, of course, is great.
And Pete Postlethwaite is the old man who gets killed.
Ah, Pete Postlethwaite. Is he in every movie?
Is there ever a
movie ever been made that doesn't have Pete Postlethwaite in it somewhere? I'm going to give you my shout. We'll give you a little bit more time to think. I think The Natural with Robert Redford, that's a good movie, isn't it? Do you like that?
Interesting. Oh, I don't think I've seen it.
Ah, it's a good movie. You want to see it?
Well, I was going to ask you, because I won't be able to come up with an answer.
Okay. That's all right.
I think the trouble is I find most sports movies leave me... They're just kind of so unbelievable, and everything's kind of neatly tied in a bow at the end, and they're quite predictable. What's so enjoyable about actual sport is the uncertainty of what's to come.
Yes, that's true.
And when that underdog's victory happens... It doesn't feel like it's being carefully choreographed for an audience response. It just kind of happens, and you suddenly realize that you're in something when you weren't expecting it. And I think it's almost impossible to recreate that in a fictional world compared to when it just happens live. So this is not to say that sports movies shouldn't exist.
Yeah, but it is true that they're a little bit predictable. The Natural was... Yes, so another question, what's the greatest sporting event... what's your greatest sporting event? That's a difficult question, isn't it?
It is. The trouble is, we're completely different. So I can get on board with any sporting event, especially in the context. If you're in a room and everyone's going crazy, and and the commentator's like, this hasn't happened in 50 years. You can start to get on board with any story because somebody is overcoming some odds. Somebody is achieving some form of legacy, even if they've continually win, because they're going to win more times than anyone else. So I can always enjoy any scenario to an extent, but the sport that I watch is American football. And
I did watch that in the 80s,
and that's the sport that I am involved in coaching and supporting on the sidelines. And so when I'm helping the kids that I coach play those games, I'm on the edge of my seat. I can't control myself.
Yeah, so that's the thing about sport, isn't it? It doesn't matter how irrelevant the match is. So one of my favourite events, and I have no idea what competition it was. I think it was the First Division, but it was in the 70s. I think it was Villa 3, Everton 2. The best match I've ever seen. I have no idea what it was, but it was played on a muddy pitch in the middle of winter. You know, we're back in the 70s when, the pitches are completely different. They're just mud patches. Fantastic. On the other hand, there are things, because I'm now going to answer my own question, which is the reason for me asking you, essentially. Mm-hmm. There are things England 5, Germany 1, England 4, but Holland 1, Freddie's Ashes, but it's got to be the 1981 test against the Aussies, hasn't it? That has got to be the greatest thing that has ever happened in history. Even better than the dissolution of the monasteries. You heard it here. Anyway, there you go. There's my opinion publicly stated.
Speaking off of that, just to, I guess, blow my own trumpet, or the trumpet of my players.
Go for it, Wolf.
The last season, because it's that up and down thing, we were playing the team that eventually were the national champions, and they'd beaten us three times already that year. And it was our last time to play them, trying to secure a playoff spot. They're an incredibly tough opponent. We take an excellent lead early on, continue to maintain a good lead. There should be a turnover that keeps us on top, but the ref's call, what I believe, is a completely unjustified penalty. So the turnover is taken away, they score, the game is drawing even, it's ultra-competitive down to the last minute, there's like 1 minute left on the clock, they score again, so now they have a choice. If they go for the one-point conversion, it's a draw. If they go for the two, they can take the lead.
It does sound like a film.
They are arrogant, and they go for the two-point conversion to take the lead.
Ah.
So, and then they fail. We manage to stop them because we intercept them and almost return it down the other end. So now we're up by 1 point. We're now, admittedly, the last minute is I just have to run the clock down. But
that sounds fantastic.
Like that David and Goliath story, you've only ever won like two games that year. You're playing the team that wins it all.
Excellent.
And what's the name? It comes down to that one play.
And what's the name of your team?
Oh, they're the Brighton and Hove Scorpions.
The Brighton and Hove Scorpions. Well, let's hear it for the Brighton and Hove Scorpions, everyone. Round of applause.
Woo!
My own personal playing career had no glories like that in it. I was the captain of the under-16 hockey team, played 9, lost 9, scored 1 goal in the entire season. So let's move on from that.
Did you score that goal?
God, no. I asked one of the older boys. I said, we're having this terrible time. I'm captain. I'm having an awful time. He said, well, it's not the captain's fault. Who's your centre-half? He said, I am. I said, so, moving on. So, my little bit about what I didn't like so much about the movie, because I basically agree with you. I love the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
The love interest is a little bit tiresome. Elizabeth, played by Rachel Shelley, is sadly a bit annoying and irritating.
Yeah,
I'm not
sure
I really believe that bit of it very much.
It's very bad.
And I don't know. The thing with Gowrie works sort of fine, I guess, but the love interest thing was not the big thing. But that's it.
I think the only thing it's good for is that it's giving Gowrie's character a little bit more of like a journey to go on.
Yeah,
and it adds romantic tension rather than just knowing that they'll definitely be together. I think the trouble is, like you say, you don't really buy the third part of the love triangle, and Bavard never really spends much time in
No, he's
like
completely
a
uninterested
situation.
And doesn't you know, couldn't even imagine why, you know, it would be daft, you know.
And so there's never actually threat involved in the like love triangle. In any like genuine sense, you can tell that the movie wants it to be there, but it doesn't really impact you. And then it just resolves itself exactly as you predict at the end. So it's fine. I don't hate it, but it's not particularly effective.
Okay, should we move on to history then, Wolf? Such as it is.
The only thing I wanted to add is, did this movie remind you of A Bug's Life?
No.
It didn't.
Next question. Okay. I've never heard it. I don't think I've ever seen A Bug's Life, to be honest.
I did
see it, but I thought it was entirely forgettable as a movie.
Okay, then. Because Bug's Life is inspired by, I'll say these movies,
right?
Maybe you'll know them. Seven Samurai and The Magnificent Seven.
No. Is that right? Good Lord.
Well, it must be, because... But what I mean is it's like a classic storyline, just done over and over. And specifically in A Bug's Life, which is my main reference point, but it happens in all of those movies, it's a group of villagers who make the food, and then a group of like thieves, bandits, overlords or whatever who come in, and in Bug's Life it's the grasshoppers, and they say, you have to pay us this amount of food every year.
Legal.
And then, there's an accident and they can't meet demand, or in Bug's Life they Flick accidentally knocks all of the food into the river. And so they're like, we'll come back at the end of the season and you will have given us all of the food again. And they're like, we'll starve if we give it to you. And they're like, do that or we'll like, destroy your anthill. And so they have to come up with a way to fight back, like in Magnificent Seven and Seven Samurai, get these fighters in to, you know, scare away the grasshoppers. It's slightly adjusted, but there's another context where you physically have no choice. You cannot pay the tax.
So you're saying that it's a trope that we're talking here. It's a type of movie.
It's just a classic storyline. Right. And then, but what's so great about this movie, and I think it's genuine, even in the context, the cricket game is so tense because it's not really about winning. It's a life and death stakes. The village will die if they have to pay triple Lagan. They will not survive. And the region will not survive, and people will die. So I think the stakes are important to mention. Even though it's a kind of a fun cricket game and it's this lighthearted family movie, the consequences of losing the match are more than just like pride. There are like real life stakes. And then it adds also that you really want to embarrass the English. And so I just wanted to mention that.
Excellent. Yeah, very good. So what we're going to do now, Wolf, is we're going to take a short break to hear from our sponsors, should we have any, and we'll be back in just a moment. So moving on to the film as a historical record, I'm not quite sure where to go with this. I mean, I can confirm that there was a British Empire in India, so tick there. The Lagan tax did exist, and the Brits often ruled through the Rajas, I think, about two-thirds of India. And although I know very little about it, no doubt this was not an easy relationship. Although, interestingly enough, an Indian Raja built a well in one of my local villages here in Stoke Row when hearing about the fact that there is no water, standing water, in the Chilterns. So there was a kind of reciprocal relationship. So, a couple of things we can tick. Clearly, it is accurate as far as the English character is concerned, as we started to discuss. So they might be cads, they might be bounders when it comes to taxation, but they don't cheat in cricket matches. The umpires are utterly impartial, and the crowd applaud politely while grinding their teeth.
Okay, you said they don't cheat. Do you, and I know it's not cheating, but when they stump
entirely
the kid
legit.
Out, and I know that it's entirely legitimate. I mean, I know he shouldn't have done it.
Sorry, but entirely legit.
Okay.
No, you might think it's sharp practice, but it's entirely legitimate.
Okay, is it legitimate to laugh at and bully your opponent?
Oh, yes, that's called sledging.
To get them so riled
that is the
up.
Australian style of cricket. Sledging.
Okay, and while I agree that can happen in sport.
It's an absolutely standard part of the sport. I played tennis down at Benson, and the guy kept on making fat signals at me.
Okay, that's horrible, and I'm sorry that happened to you, David.
By the way, it was quite funny, actually, he stuffed him.
But, well, that's the best thing about it. But in this context...
Oh, don't be such a wuss.
The power dynamic is not fair. They're saying to him, you will pay triple Lagan and your family will die.
Yeah, well, it's just the
we know, like...
Oh, that's
I'm
not
there,
part
like,
of the game, though,
like,
is it?
Calm down, calm down.
That's not part of the game. The bit of the game when they're... I don't know, there's a bit of sledging, isn't there? Or you're rubbish or whatever. The setup in terms of the Lagan thing was obviously an outrage. You know, I'm not going to argue with that bit.
I just think that it's only the one side mocking the other.
Yes,
the other
that's
because
we're
doesn't
in a feel-good
really
movie, aren't we? The barracking during the match is entirely within a sporting context. And let me tell you, okay, the Indians catch up.
Okay. So let's say I think that there's some slightly unfair tactics, but you think there's absolutely no cheating.
Yeah, actually, there is one bit of cheating. Captain Russell tries the match fix.
Oh, is that when he kicks the
ball? No. Although that was a sharp practice, he's a bit cheaty. He tries to get Lasher to act on his side and throw the game.
Oh, yeah.
But the Indians catch up with match fixing as well, a statement which will get me in trouble, and indeed the South Africans. But then the guy turns and does the honest thing. But Captain Russell is out of it. He's obviously the baddie. All the rest of the Brits, the hater type, you know, with perfect decorum. I can confirm that the cantonment structure did indeed exist from the 18th century, a way of maintaining control by the Brits while keeping a discreet military distance from the urban centres so as not to make everything too obvious and annoy everyone. I don't think there was one at Champneyr, though, as it happens. I did not check the veracity of the military uniforms. They look a bit like it ain't half hot month, so clearly they're probably unacceptable. But, you know, I'm really never been interested in that level of accuracy. There is, I suppose, the history of cricket. Would you like to hear a little about the history of cricket in India?
Yes, I think
that's a good job, because I've prepared it, so you're going to get it anyway, honestly. Cricket is apparently India's most popular sport by far. They have also imported other sports from colonialism, such as, for example...
They've imported other sports.
From colonialism. British colonialism. Hockey is the answer that I was thinking of. When I was a kid, you know, the Indians absolutely rocked it. Hockey, we were nowhere near as good as them. Well, that's nowhere near as popular.
You know what's quite a fun game to watch?
It's great fun to game, wouldn't it? They played it in a particularly thrilling way. Anyway, they were just brilliant at it when I was young.
I started watching some kabaddi.
Oh, yes. Well, in my 80s, when I was sports mad, I just essentially got in front of a telly and plugged myself in. Well, I got around to watching kabaddi as well.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Anyway, but it's true to life. It's unlikely the villagers would have known anything about it at this time. It's still an import in 1893. The first Indian club was in Bombay among the Parsi as early as 1848. But apparently the Parsi were not a grassroots lot. They didn't sort of mix very much around India, so it didn't spread out much from there. But official matches in India started between them, the Parsi, and Europeans in 1877. So you're getting the timescale. It's just starting off around the time of the film. In the early 1900s, some Indians played cricket in the English county circuit and for the England national team. Rajit Singh scored 24,692 runs, Wolf, at an average of 56 per innings, which is, you know, obviously, as you'll know, anybody over above 50 is a god. And then there's Don Bradman. He scored 72 centuries on the English first class cricket circuit and actually played for England in 1896. It became a grassroots game in India from the start of the 20th century, largely because the Rajas, the Indian princes, adopted it as a way of creating events alongside traditional local festivals and things to, you know, to encourage village life and so on. The first official Indian, I've almost finished, the first official Indian team tour was in 1911, and they became a test-playing nation in 1932 and then started giving us a spanking like the rest of the world from the 1960s.
Excellent.
So there's a bit of history for you. In general, then, I can't claim this is a great on historical accuracy score. It feels pretty authentic, I guess, in atmosphere about the villagers and their roles and the kind of things they do and things that were important to them. So certainly the thing about the rains felt absolutely kind of on the button. But there's not a lot. And, you know, the stuff about the English taking all their customs and just playing them out in India, you know, it's reasonably true to life. They don't, you know, from the end of the East India Company, any policy of mixing gets very much changed towards an imperial model. And that's reflected at this time too. You know, these are not people who are marrying locally generally as they did under the East India Company and trying to become part of any sort of hybrid society. So, you know, it's not, I don't think it's an outrage, but clearly these events didn't happen. So thus far for historical accuracy. Anything to add to that, or should we just swiftly mark it?
I only wanted to add, because I guess when it started, I was like, oh, there's not much history in this movie at all.
Yeah.
Especially based on what we're going to talk about next and some of the other films that we've done. Just wanted to make it clear, I don't think that it diminishes it as a history movie, because it is all about like what could have happened. And we've just watched enough history movies over the years which pretend to be really detailed and reference all these things, but they're changing so much that it becomes just as untruthful as if it had never happened in the first place.
No, controversial.
Okay.
I know what you mean, actually. And I do think, broadly speaking, there's two types of historical movie that we tend to... Well, three types of historical movie. There's the abomination that is true crime, which are mainly brought up by... and then there's historical movies which are depicting real events and trying to be accurate, or as accurate as they can be. And then there's films set in historical context. And, of course, my favourite history movie of all time is one of those. And I think that's similar to this, isn't it? You know, it's in a historical context.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I think all of those movies, they can have different degrees of accuracy, but it's a lot of fictional stories for entertainment put into a historical context to allow that story to happen the way that it would.
Okay, so should we score it for historical accuracy first? Give it a score out of 10, Wolf. If you dare.
How do you score it if it's all a fictional story? Because it's not inaccurate tremendously, right? Because I think our next movie is going to be very, very inaccurate. Mm. Whereas
and our next movie being...
Gladiator.
Okay.
I just don't think, like... We've watched so many movies where we're like, it's a negative number because it's doing everything wrong.
Yes.
How do you rate
a movie Can I think of one of those? Oh, Braveheart.
Yeah. This movie's not doing any of that. It's just kind of made up a story. So if anything, I don't even know how to judge it because I almost think that it shouldn't have a score.
Ah. Oh,
like it...
Scoreless in Gaza, at mill with the slaves.
Does it... That's a, do you agree?
That's a bastardized quote. I kind of know what you mean. I'm going to go take a different approach and say that clearly nothing happened in this movie, and therefore it can't get a 10. But the context was realistic, and therefore I'm going to give it a 5. I'm going to give it 4.5 marks.
We have the same kind of viewpoint.
We're doing the same sort of thing, aren't we? Now, as a film, Wolf.
I'm going to give it an 8. But I think for like enjoyment, like how much I enjoyed this movie is a 10.
Right. Okay, that's nice. We ought to have a refinement of the scoring system. I mean, I went for 7, but actually that doesn't reflect the dichotomy, which you are very accurate recording. You know, there are things wrong with the movie. It's not high art, but it is an absolute hoot. And 3 hours, 50 minutes, you know, went like a puff of dust.
Can I ask one last question?
Go.
Who was your favourite character?
I don't know that I had a fave, to be honest. I mean, they all sort of did their job. I mean, Bavan was a kind of likeable sort of hero, but I think... And Gowry was kind of like... But none of them... I don't know that I had one.
And I also might agree that I don't necessarily have one, but I think that as like a group of 11, and thinking of like... The Seven Samurai as well, where you're like, oh, Charles Bronson. Oh, and there's Yul Brynner. And oh, Steve McQueen. You're moving through the list. I think that they are really identifiable as individuals.
Yes, and that is true.
And I loved Ishmael overcoming his injury to come in. I loved, is it Laka?
Yeah.
And his betrayal and his return to grace. Uh-huh. I thought that was thrilling stuff. Bagger, who couldn't catch.
Uh-huh.
Oh my god, you had to on the edge of my sheet. Edge of my sheet.
well, you know, sheets are important.
Every time Bagger had to make a catch. So I know what they're doing, but like it makes it, the game is just so exciting. Kashra, the untouchable, which we didn't mention. There is like a little bit of a discussion about the caste system in this film, which again, it feels like it's done in...
it's all again feel good. It all gets resolved beautifully and they overcome their... social differences, but, you know, which is...
Yeah,
in
part of the whole coming together. So I was a bit like, oh, okay, fine. But I guess the overall message is still a positive one, so I'm like, let's get on board with it. But yeah, his story, his bowling, his winning the game, oh, gosh, when he gets those three out, oh, I couldn't believe it.
Gets a hat-trick. He's on a hat-trick.
Oh, I was just like swinging. my shirt was off, going around over my head.
Yeah, excellent.
And you're like, yes, it's turning. Yeah. They're doing it. I thought all of their individual kind of journeys that they had to go on. Oh, and I'd love to go. Who has the chickens?
Oh yes, and there's all the fuffle about them winding up their chickens all the time, and then the chickens become useful because it teaches them how to do the fielding really well.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know, that kind of feel good thing, it reminds me of a lot of British films.
Mm-hmm.
All the movies that I know you'll enjoy, like when we watched Pride.
The things that I get told off for liking, yeah.
It kind of,
yeah,
but
boot factories in Northampton coming good, that sort of thing.
It's the way that they're like this group of like all these odd little individuals, and they're all quite comical, and then they have to like, I don't know, the story's just him catching chickens, and then they're like, quick, see if you can catch this ball, and then he does, and then they're like, wow, you're brilliant, you're going to be an excellent catcher.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's all
that is nice, neat. It is neat. It is really nice. And you're quite right that you come out of the film. These people are individuals, and you recognise them, which is quite difficult in a film with so many different characters in it. You know, often you get washed away with that kind of thing, and that they do that really well. It helps the fact that it's 3 hours 50 minutes, of course, so they have a certain amount of time. But you know, that's very good. So basically, would you advise somebody to go and see this movie? And if so, why?
I think everyone should watch it. I just thought it was...
It's required. You can no longer listen to the History and Technicolor podcast unless you've watched Lagan.
If you like cricket, for sure. I mean, I'm not that big of a cricket fan, and I really enjoyed it for the cricket. I thought the game was great. I thought it was just a really feel-good sports movie that I was very surprised good. I'd never seen before.
Yeah, and I love the singing and dancing. Great! Thank you very much. Right, everybody, do come onto the Facebook site and tell us what you think and try and watch it, because, I mean, it really is fun. I know 3 hours, 50 minutes is long, but, you know, I swear to God you'll enjoy it. But come along to the Facebook group and have an opinion, say what you think. Next time, Wolf and I will be back, and we are going to do Gladiator, because we decided, again, in our cynical grab for power and audience, that we needed to do a crowd pleaser. Although quite what else there is to say about Gladiator, I don't know. But there we go. We're going to give it a shot next time. Okay?
Yep.
Thanks for coming, everybody. Thanks for coming, Wolf.
Thank you, David.
It's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from him.
Are you not entertained?